Hey, welcome to the Knowles 24/7 podcast. This is Brendan Sinone. I'm trying to provide faux energy today. It's not really genuine at all. And also, I don't know why I say welcome to the Knowles 24/7 podcast. Like, you guys aren't actually here. Anyways, I got Chris Nee with me today. He is in a weird place, but that's okay. We're going to take your questions and talk a little bit about spring practice, a little bit of recruiting. Guys, it's not going to be a super long podcast, hopefully 30 minutes in and out. Get you your information and the questions you provided for us on the on Concord message board. So, Chris, we've been covering practice for a week now. We've had more access in the past week than we've had in probably the past 2 years. General takeaways from what we've seen since the last podcast we had after a couple of open practices, or one open practice. But
a lot of learning going on out there, which is similar to what I said last time around. You know, they've kind of slowed things down to some degree. They're trying to get guys to kind of understand the intricacies of their specific positions, duties, what's being asked of them, what can come from their skill sets. Willie, very involved. It's fun to watch him. A lot more with the offense, obviously, than the defense. I really enjoy watching David Kelly and Harlan Burnett work. Those are two guys I've kind of gravitated to watching a good bit when we're out there. Very impressed by him. Greg Fry is certainly trying to kick some asses in his group and get the best five he can out of it. You know, that's a group that I think there's going to be a lot of work to be done after spring is over, before we know who's going to be the guys. But in general, you know, it's going well. I feel like every day is productive. The one thing I really took away from day five today, Wednesday, was that the energy is still good. You know, your early days, you're always energetic. You're back at it. You're doing it again. But day five is day five of 15. You're kind of hitting that midway point almost, and sometimes it lulls, and I didn't see that today. And for a few guys who were starting a little groggy early in the morning, coaches were getting after them, but that was very few and far between.
I agree. The energy level has been pretty consistent since day one. For our listeners, because we got the question a few times in different forums, the way practice works and our availability, what Chris and I can see and glean and take away kind of changes, I think, from practice to practice. The first 2 days were open practices, meaning the entirety of the practices were open. We had the podcast after the first day to talk about that, and that was open to like the public, so anyone could have come in and seen it. The last few days, the last three practices since, have been a little bit more restricted. We get about, what, Chris, 25 minutes or so of open period?
Yeah, roughly a half hour. They've mixed it up a bit with when we go in, when we depart, as far as like the period that we first get out there. Mm-hmm. For example, we started yesterday with Oklahoma drills. Today we went in, they were working on ball security on one field. So it's been a mix. It's not like we're just watching stretching or something. We are getting able to see little bits and pieces of different things.
Yeah, there's something to take away. It's not a ton. Obviously, if you're watching like one-on-ones or seven-on-seven, there's a lot more you can take away than individual drills. But I think the thing that we've been able to see pretty consistently that Chris alluded to is the coaches and the way they interact with the players. And that's been really cool to see. It's been refreshing because it's been different than what we've seen in the past. And I'm not even going to get into comparing it. I like the way this coaching staff gets after it. I like the way that they are very rapid paced with what they coach. Everything's in bite-sized, digestible chunks. You mentioned David Kelly, and today I stuck around with the wide receivers to kind of watch him, and they didn't do anything crazy, just kind of implemented some route running for tunnel screens and blocking tendencies, what they want them to do with short blocks, and then also with press coverage, how to beat that. The way Coach Kelly is so hands-on, I think, is impressive, and it's kind of indicative of what the entire coaching staff is. It's a very hands-on group, a lot of energy, and again, just fast, quick tempo. It fits into exactly what Willie Taggart wants to kind of implement throughout the entire football program, which is that speed, that tempo. And that's been something that's been pretty consistent through five practices. In terms of guys that we've kind of observed stand out, you know, again, there's only so much that we can take from what we've seen. I do think it's been encouraging. Let me know if you disagree, Chris. I think the offense has, from what we've seen and what we've heard, has made some pretty sizable strides since that first day, which is when their heads were spinning, getting used to the tempo. The quarterback seemed to be settling in a little bit. We're hearing some pretty good things about the bigger wide receivers like Tamarian Terry and Keith Gavin. The running backs, I think you know what you're going to get with that group. It's going to be how they're utilizing them, which has also been really cool to see. You know, Zaquandre White line up in the slot sometimes, or Amir Rasul line up in the slot. Like, that's stuff that makes a lot of sense on paper. I think the offense is going to be pretty fun to watch this year based on the little glimpses we've seen so far.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, a couple guys I'd add to the ones you brought up. Landon Dickerson certainly getting it done with the O-line, being a leader, doing a job in drills. He's clearly a guy that's kind of ready to make a contribution. Derek Kelly's an O-lineman who, in the parts I've watched of them, he seems to do things at a higher level than the other guys among the group. DJ Matthews at wide receiver has been very good. DJ definitely looks like a kid that's re-energized, ready to go, and he can do some things in the offensive attack that FSU's going to employ. He's pretty electric, very quick. You know, if you give him the adjustment route where he can make the decision, rubbing off a linebacker, whether lay flat or go high, he's going to do some things with that, and that's something they were working on today with the tunnel screen stuff where you got to read the linebacker and figure out what's next for you on the play, and that's a place where DJ is going to excel. On offense in general, I feel like they're coming along. And the biggest thing that I notice is I don't ever feel like coaches are looking at, like, an end result right now. There's not a whole lot like, oh, that play didn't work or you guys are doing it wrong. It's more like, you know, individually, are you doing what you're supposed to do on this play? What are you seeing on this play? It's still very much a learning stage, and it's funny. It's not – there's no feeling as though they're preparing for a game tomorrow. It's all about preparing to be really good at being able to practice when the time comes to prepare for a game. I feel like that's the stage they're at, and that's very, very true on the offensive side of the ball.
Would you say this is more of a process?
I didn't want to use the word process. I wouldn't even call it process. I would say that it's very teacher and student, and they're not close to the final exam.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No,
and the teacher conducts themselves that way. There's no sense of needed perfection. Now, you'll see guys push. Greg Fry is definitely getting after some of those O-linemen. He's pushing some buttons, trying to see what he has in that group.
Odell
definitely does that on defense. David Kelly with his receivers is definitely – he's different with a guy like Keith Gavin, who's entering that latter year, than a Tamorian Terry, who's basically entering his first full year. So you kind of see minute differences, but there's no tearing down of people very much. I guess is the best way of putting it. Even Greg Fry, who will get after a guy, I've not seen him truly tear into a guy and kind of tear him down. There's none of that going on. It's more so you're supposed to do it right. For example, Greg Fry on Monday got on to an offensive lineman for not giving his teammate a good look in a drill. And basically said, Clemson's going to give him a good look, Virginia Tech's going to give him a good look, so on and so forth. And I thought that was very empowering to the player, basically putting the onus on him to be the best player he could be for his teammate to be better. And that's something that Willie gets after. He wants competition. He wants guys that are going to work hard among themselves within their group to try to improve the entire group. And I think that's kind of where they're at 5 days in to practice.
You know, what you mentioned about Greg Fry, I've seen the same with today. I noticed with David Kelly, and then when they will, when they observe something is done incorrectly, it's noted, it's corrected, and then it moves on quickly. Yeah. And everything kind of fits into this overarching theme of tempo, of fast. And Willie Taggart wants everything that happens to be quick, but he wants it to be in control too. And that's not easy to get to. And that's not just offensive philosophy. That's not just defensive philosophy. That is just the philosophy of how he wants his program to work and everything be intertwined in that sense. Everything needs to have a purpose and everything needs to be quick. And that's what they're trying to instill, I think. I think that's what we're seeing this spring. I think that's kind of cool to see already some steps being made, some guys getting more comfortable within those confines. Defensively, same thing. Like, there's only so much that we can take away. I really do like Harlan Burnett. I think he's really, really sharp. At the very least, he's going to coach the hell out of those defensive backs. You can tell he knows what he's talking about. Again, he gets his point across really, really quickly. Guys are engaged. They listen. They learn. They don't make the same mistake twice, or at least that's not what we're observing. And he has a lot of energy and enthusiasm, too. So we'll see how he can call a defense. The results at Michigan State were pretty good. At the least, I think you're going to see that secondary get better coaching than it did in the past couple of years.
Yeah, to me, the big question on defense is linebackers. One, who's going to be the guys that they go to there? And two, what exactly are they asking those guys to do in this defensive scheme?
Mm-hmm.
The DBs, it's pretty clear who their go-to was, especially on the first team. You know, Levante and Stanford outside, Hamsa and Cyrus Fagan, as well as others like A.J. Westbrook in the middle.
Would be, too, they seem to like.
Yeah, would be is definitely a guy. And I think Kyle Myers is another guy that's going to be relied upon a good bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the defensive line, I've noticed Mark and Odell, Coach Snyder and Coach Higgins, both of their groups working together a good bit, both of them kind of cross-training with the coaching of it. And it's just – it kind of flows. There's a natural cohesiveness with those two groups working together and those two coaches working together. And Odell – Odell's always brought it. He's never been a guy that's tapered off with the way he handles practice, but there's definitely a bounce to his step these days, and he seems looser, having more fun. He's definitely it goes across all teams. Odell's kind of the godfather of FSU football out there on the field, and mm-hmm. I think when he's in good spirits and carrying himself like he is, it's very good for the others. And another guy like that is Mario Edwards Jr. He's a guy that looks completely rejuvenated, and it comes across. And Mario, I don't know how much people are familiar with him from a coaching standpoint. He's energy. I mean, he's fun. He's mm-hmm. about, let's get this business done today. And he's enjoyable to watch, and it's out there. And I see that with the defense. They're guys that are they're energetic. They're firing off. They want to do something. They want to get after it. I think it's going to be fun watching the first scrimmage and seeing how they really do kind of fly around the ball a bit more, which is something that they certainly lost as a group a season ago.
Yeah, it became tentative and just overthinking too much, and that's habits that have that this current staff is trying to strip them or strip out of them. All right, three things we're going to go over, guys, for the rest of the podcast here. I want to talk about the position changes real quick. It's relatively, it's minutia to an extent, but I think it's overarching of a theme that we've seen with Willie and his ideas. One, I take your questions, and we want to give Chris a 5-minute window or so to talk about recruiting. Chris, your preference to go into recruiting or questions?
No, let's talk positions first. Okay. Since that's right.
We're going to do that, but
still
then,
keeping it on the field.
All right, and then we'll hit questions, and then anything that's not covered with recruiting, I'll let you take at the end. Okay,
works for me.
All right, position changes again. This isn't going to be headline stuff. Wally Amy moves from defensive tackle to defensive end. We have Ontario Wilson moves from cornerback to wide receiver. Deontay Sheffield, I do not believe is on scholarship yet, but is supposed to be. Was it blue shirt or gray shirt? I always forget.
Blue shirt.
And he was brought in last signing class from running back to slot wide receiver. And then the other ones were Gabe Neighbors and Jonathan Vickers, which I think we already kind of saw from the roster when that was released, that they would be moving from fullback to kind of more of a tight end, H-back type of deal. So those are the ones, and for casual fans, like those aren't names that you're going to sound any alarms because they're not huge names. To me, man, those are all really, really smart, sneaky, good moves. Now we'll see how they pan out and if any of those guys make significant impacts, but it shows one good self-awareness from this coaching staff of what they have strengths at this position groups, what they have weaknesses at, and then what they think they can do to maximize their guy's skill set. Like, it makes sense, and it's three-pronged. And to me, it shows that Willie Taggart is willing to make quick changes and that he has pretty good oversight of what the strengths are. Because, I'll kick it over to you, Chris, you've been talking about Wally Amy moving to defensive end. I think we both have, but you've specifically been beating that drum for more than a year. We had heard Ontario Wilson could maybe be good there. We thought Deontay Sheffield would make a lot of sense as a slot. Like, these are all things that on paper make a ton of sense.
Yeah, and they didn't overthink it. I think that's the most important thing. With Wally, that's the most sensible move. You don't have a great big defensive end. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that's going to give you good there. Like, mm-hmm. he may not be great, but he's definitely not going to be bad. He's going to give you a good effort, good production, handle a lot of snaps. So I definitely think it was very sensible. With Pokey, Ontario Wilson moving to offense, natural move. He's a very athletic dude, and truthfully, he was sort of buried at the cornerback spot. He's not as technically developed as many others over there are, and obviously there's a need at receiver. So to me, that was a very easy one to do. I think Gabe Neighbors is going to flourish in that new spot. He's actually a very good receiving guy out of backfield, mm-hmm. still tough as nails. We'll put somebody on their ass. We'll hit them. He'll do what you want. So he's very nice. I think he'll be good. Vickers will be a nice compliment to him. But to me, Neighbors is the better of the two.
Mm-hmm. Did I say Vickers earlier?
I don't know, but they fall within the same realm. Okay. Since the fullback's now dead. Fullback no longer exists at FSU. Deontay Sheffield, yeah, he's awesome. Sheffield's a great kid. Mm-hmm. You ask him to do anything, he's going to jump through it. You know, he's going to run with full vigor to want to do what he wants to do. And he can catch the ball. And he was, again, it's kind of like Pokey at DB. He wasn't going to take snaps away from, Cam Akers and Patrick and maybe Razul and LeBourne. Mm. So why not go get a spot where they're depleted and need help and can do something? So, yeah, I think they're very sensible. I think they're all kind of – they make sense. I don't see a Rick Leonard situation where it's like, you waited too long or how's this transition going to handle because there's such a learning curve to come. I don't see that with any of the moves they've made.
It's all – to steal a line from a Goodfellas, it's all profit.
Yeah.
It is. It's literally like there's no negative.
It's mutually beneficial to all parties involved in the decisions. The coaching staff gets better depth at certain positions, and talented players that can do those positions, and those players get better opportunities to do what they can do.
Yep, well said. So let's move on. I mean, that hit the nail on the head there. That just makes a lot of sense.
Questions. Lightning round questions.
All right.
Man of the people.
Zach Knoll starts us off. What's the deal with the Ground Zero visit? Who will be on it, and when is it happening?
I need to get specific details. Originally, the plan was spring game. I've talked to a couple different people, and sometime in April, so it may not be the spring game. Jaden Daniels is a possibility. Sean Dollars, the DB that they just offered, whose name is escaping me. I expect at least those three, and they're kind of the headliners for it.
Okay. All right, moving on. BJ3Pug, why do you guys hate J-Rob so much?
I love Janarius. I do, like, too. Personally, I like Janarius. I dealt with him a great deal as a recruit. He's coming along. It's practice. We're going to end up shooting video of guys, and sometimes they're going to win, and sometimes they're going to lose. And, yeah, I get it. Social media turns it into a circus where you don't really enjoy it. I know that our intention, especially Brendan's intention, was not to shame J-Rob. And
For context, we had video of Oklahoma drills, which is basically 2-on-1.
Patrick got the better of him.
Jacquez Patrick did what you expect a 235-pound senior to do at running back, which is, J-Rob came off a block, did really well, by the way, to come off a block against Juwan Williams, and then didn't have any leverage and got ran over. I was probably a little, in hindsight, to say he could crumble to the turf was probably a little hyperbolous, but, I mean, I think he didn't win that battle, and that's what happens. Yeah. If he had destroyed whoever he was destroying or whoever was going up against, we would have written about that and talked about him, making a good play. No, that's how it works. We'll move on. DMEL or Demel? I don't know. It's a good question. Do you like how my voice went up? Good question. It's a good question. More likely, 70 combined catches for Campbell/Terry, so George Campbell, Tamarian Terry, or 1,000 rushing yards combined for Kalon LeBourne and Amar Rasul.
I'm taking LeBourne and Rasul.
Well, only because...
One, I think it's going to be a run-heavy offense.
Yeah.
And two, I love George Campbell, but I just can't trust that he'll actually be on the football field.
Well, that's what kind of makes this...
That's a believe-it-when-you-see-it type of thing with him. I expect LeBourne to play.
Mm-hmm.
With Campbell, we'll see. He's obviously coming off the injury and had issues with staying healthy in his career here, disappointingly.
They're going to go run heavy. I don't know if LeBourne or Rasul. I mean, in front of them, they have Cam Akers, Jacquez Patrick, presumably.
Yeah.
It's tough.
But one gets 550 and the other one gets 450. You hit 1,000. It's not extremely far-fetched.
That's true. And I
feel like the other one is more far-fetched, I guess.
I mean, there's a pretty big caveat of George Campbell having to stay healthy. I think Tamarian Terry, I think silver lining here, or not silver line, but hidden in there. Terry's going to, I think, play this year, and I think he's going to be impact player.
He's going to do some. He may even be a dude.
We'll see. We'll see. I think there's reason to be excited about it. We'll see what happens when the lights turn on, but he's looked really good so far. He looked really good last camp and then never played. So, process. Who is our starting linebackers against Virginia Tech? That's a good question, too, Demel, because, like Chris alluded to earlier, it's kind of fair game. I think Dontavius Jackson is a guy we've seen steadily with the ones.
Yeah. He is in incredibly better shape. He has dropped roughly 25 pounds. He is far more athletic. He is a drastically happier kid than he was a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's energized. He definitely has shown some flashes to do it. That position, though, very much up for grabs. I don't think Raymond Woody knows who his ones are quite yet. DeKalen Brooks has been kind of a surprise of camp to me.
Yep.
Amari Gaynor's here to compete. He's not scared of being a freshman. Josh Brown's obviously capable. Emmett Rice will be coming off injury. So you got a lot of options there. Leonard Warner's a guy who I think is capable of doing some good things for you. I may have even forgot a name.
Did you say Amari Gaynor?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was reading that on questions.
But if I was betting money, I'd say Dontavius is one of your backers.
Mm-hmm.
Second one, probably lean towards... Maybe Josh Brown, because you're probably going to want somebody who's a little bit more of an edge type.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that position's up for grabs.
I do, too. I do think Jackson is kind of the one that if I had to put money in, this isn't me going on a limb, if I had to put money on any one guy starting for sure against Virginia Tech, I think he's the guy. Because he has probably the most impactful or significant experience of any linebacker they have, which isn't a ton. You mentioned physically he's gotten in better shape. We know he can play.
He came out of the – I was sitting outside the moor waiting for a recruit the other day, and he came out, Dontavius did, and he had his hoodie on. I didn't recognize him. That's how much his body shape has changed. He very much was kind of thick in the middle last year, and that's gone.
I was trying to do a Sir Mix-a-Lot reference, but I'm not there right now. Demel also asked, because it's kind of these two questions back-to-back intertwined.
Trying to be equal opportunity over here.
I'm just trying to get through this quickly. FSGAT77 says, I want Dunmore. Will he pop on his next visit? That's the wide receiver, John Dunmore.
Right, yeah, now. He's coming in doing this weekend. I believe it's Saturday that he's doing. I don't think it's far-fetched for him to make an early decision. FSU, Florida are kind of the main two there. He's visiting both of them. Visiting Florida, then FSU. But I don't know for a fact that he's on the verge of making a decision. But he is very, very high on FSU. Has been since his first visit back in February.
Okay. Moving on to, look like Peter Work Done 26 or something kind of like that.
P-Dub.
This was brought up in another thread, but if you had to choose between the two, would it be Taysan or Hal? Can you pronounce Taysan's name for me?
He did it for me a couple times. I have it on audio. I'm going to study it.
Just for the, I think the audience wants
Fumacha,
to
Fumacha, I think is.
Fumanchu?
Yeah, very nice kid. It's Taysan, for the record. The first name, you pronounce T-A-I-S-U-N as Taysan. So that part's very easy. I'm just letting you know. I would take Hal over Taysan, but I think they're both very good. I said in the other thread, I think all four quarterbacks FSU is focused on, Bo Nix being the fourth one, mm-hmm. Taysan, Sam, and Jaden Daniels being the other three. I think all four are very, very high-quality quarterbacks. I would take Hal over any and all of them. I think he's a good athlete who's got an excellent arm, who does a great job dissecting the field, and he plays fairly decent competition. The biggest knock I have on Taysan is the competition. I watch his film, and it's good stuff. He's an excellent athlete with a good arm, very live arm, very talented kid. But I just don't know what he can do against a higher-level comp. I think he would be good, but I would like to be able to see that in some form or fashion. I'd like to see Taysan go to a couple camps, a couple events, and see him against real good nationally. Kind of kids he's going to face in college and see how he handles that before I'm all in on him. But I think he's right there on the cusp of how. And Bo Nix is great, but FSU's not getting Bo Nix unless Auburn burns to the ground.
You're not a fan of Bridgeport, Connecticut's talent level?
I think it's Avon Old Farms, actually.
I think that's the name of the school. I think he's from... My mom went to school in Bridgeport, and I heard the name, and I...
Hey, the last kid FSU got from Connecticut was pretty good. Both of them, actually. Will Ty and Born Warner.
Yeah, one of them still playing in the NFL. And yeah. It's someone who wasn't drafted in the first round.
Expected, yeah.
For what it's worth, and not that anyone really listens to the podcast for my evaluations, I really liked Hal's highlight tape.
I think Hal's the best quarterback in the country.
I think that's... are they going to be able to take two high-level quarterbacks? I know they probably want
I think
two,
they would
but
love
can, they,
to.
Can they get... Like, how difficult is it to convince two blue-chip guys to come in on that position?
It's tough, but it's happened plenty of times. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's all about... you know, what's the opportunity in year one, year two? Because those guys are realistic, and one of them probably realizes eventually I may have to leave, so I'm going to have to know early in my career, am I going to have to leave there? Mm-hmm. You know, if their belief is I should be a starter. The big thing with both of those kids is Walt Bell. Bell was, I believe, Hal's first offer. Been involved with him a very long time. Mm-hmm. And he's been involved with Taysan dating back to his Maryland days, and they have a very, very good relationship. So that's helped to get both of those kids through the door. Sam's coming in this coming weekend. Taysan was in earlier in the spring.
Big recruitment for Walt Bell because he was really close with, who's the kid I had to drive all the way up to Birmingham for?
James Foster.
Let's try to forget
but that.
But
that was a shorter relationship.
But he did a really good job
building it in a short span
and just lost out.
These kids are multi-year recruitments.
That's what I'm saying, though, that it's going to be interesting to see, I guess, what he does with that kind of groundwork.
And I think he's done an excellent job with a kid like Hal of kind of establishing himself as an individual that he would like to be coached by. Who is now at a school that obviously is pretty damn appealing to come play football for in Florida State.
We didn't talk about Coach Bell when mentioning the coaches earlier. I enjoyed why I paid attention to the quarterbacks on Monday, and I enjoyed watching him. Again, same thing, man. Just real quick, says what he wants to say, gets and he's mixing it up too. Like he's there catching footballs in the flat from the wide receiver. Like
it's having fun.
Fun group. Yep, it's
and
a
it, fun him group. And Willie's interaction with coaching is very smooth. There, you know, it never
no hovering.
Looks. It never looks like one's trying to talk over the other. Mm-hmm. It's very much we're each going to get our punches in. We're going to make these guys better football players.
Willie's letting him do his his thing, and it's so far so good. It's pretty healthy dynamic from what we can see in our window. All right,
nice addendum.
Blue 24. Any recruits that you expect at the spring game yet? Has the D line been dominant so far? I won't answer about the D line because we don't see enough of that. Tough to tell, but. Spring game?
Spring game, Kayvon Thibodeau, number one player in the country, plans to come. I believe he's here when he gets off the plane in Tallahassee or wherever he's flying into in Florida. It would be his second trip to Florida in the last month. He was in Gainesville earlier. And then the California boys, the Sean Dollars, Jaden Daniels, that whole bunch, they're a possibility for the spring game. Haven't put a whole lot of work into the spring game. They're working pretty hard on getting guys in for practices, and they're hoping to repeat a lot of those guys as spring game visitors. For example, Timothy Smith, a 2020 defensive tackle that was in on Monday that they offered, he may come back for the spring game. There's been a couple other kids that have been in over the last week that have said that as well. So that group will grow and will obviously have a good list, but I'm not investing a ton of time in that. I'm more worried about this coming Saturday because it should be another decent visit weekend, and then I'll turn my attention to next week. It's a constant trickle. The concept of junior day is drastically different now than it was a year ago. A year ago, junior day was 70 kids in, 40 of them that they really wanted, all in at one time, one big day, and then a minor trickle of other kids throughout practices. With this group, it's far more of a steady trickle throughout every day. And, like, for example, Saturday had the title of junior day. It was underwhelming. Monday was a far better visitor group, but we didn't call it a junior day. But if we did, it would have been a great junior day. So, like, don't get obsessed with that title. Move on from that title and realize that their way of doing recruiting business, it's effective, it's working, it's very personal, which is the way they want it, and they want it to be steady and constant.
Another recruiting-based question from FSU Bone. How badass is the spring game environment going to be with all the players that will be there? And also, does Chris know all the words to Let's Talk About Sex by Salt and Pepper?
If I don't know the words, I'll just make them up. It's kind of like when you sing in the shower in the morning, the words all sound right when you're singing them loud. And I do not know every word to it. I do know many, though.
Dude,
I have quite the healthy 80s, 90s hip-hop.
Chris is a music buff.
I am a music guy, yes. I love my music. And I like all kinds of music. And about the atmosphere, I think it's going to be pretty cool. I think they've made a strong effort to kind of build a framework to play within, to have a fun game with the whole 90s throwback. I think the concert's a cool idea. A lot of former players plan to come back, so they're definitely making a strong effort. And they want things to be events, celebrations. They want it to be fun. So, yeah, I think it will go. And, hey, it's on a baseball weekend, which I do not understand historically why we did not play spring games on baseball weekends here. It makes sense. Turn it into, like, a celebration of Florida State athletics.
Yeah, I think everyone's excited. Like, there hasn't been one negative review about having the baseball intertwined with that.
Makes it sold sense. Out on that Saturday for baseball against a pretty good Duke club.
It's a lot of stuff that's making sense these days. Let's see. FSU Bone, another good question. Out of
Lethal Simplicity.
War daddies and badasses. Out of Chris, Josh, and B-Son, which one is Vanilla Ice? Which one is Salt and Pepper? And which one is Rob Bass? We probably can't have Bob on the podcast right now, but Bob, who's Vanilla Ice, who's Salt and Pepper, and who's Rob Bass?
I know who these people are, and I know that I would rather watch Vanilla Ice on HGTV, but I have no idea how to answer this question.
I think Newberg's Vanilla Ice,
the haircut. Okay. Yeah, we're all
so much work
there.
Into his hair. Yeah,
I'm Rob Bays, and Chris is Salt and Pepper because there's two of them, and you're a little bit bigger.
I'm kind of a big dude. Yeah. Yeah. So that works for me. Right. I'll take that.
On the same page. I like it. Semicolon, like a semicolon. Get it? But his name's Cole.
Focus.
That's
buddy.
Good. All right. What position group depth on defense concerns you the most, linebacker or strong side defensive end?
I'd probably say strong side. I feel like linebacker, you don't need a ton of bodies. You can get by with having six good ones. I think they probably have six good ones. Strong side DN, Wally, I feel pretty good, was a nice thing to shore that up, but we'll see what they have after that,
And Joshua Kano hasn't practiced yet.
Right, that changes the whole dynamic of the
defense. I don't know if J-Rob's a weak side or a strong side guy at this point.
He's been working, it seems, more like with Burns, which would be the weak side, obviously. But I'm interested when Kando comes back, does Kando go behind Burns and then you move him over? How you handle J-Rob and Kando in that equation? Yeah. Personally, I think the two best defensive ends on this team are Kando and Burns.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Wally is a great edge setter, large body guy, and then J-Rob's the one you hopefully can develop and turn into some. I don't expect much from Trey Lawson.
No, not this year.
I think he's still a little whiles off. And then beyond those guys, we'll kind of see what they have. And then they have a group coming in that they really like, and some of those guys might be able to do something in the fall for them.
Yeah, and that's, I think, kind of when you're looking at defensive end, remember there's a handful of, especially the strong side defensive end types.
Yeah,
Dennis Briggs, Malcolm Lamar, who else?
Chapman's kind of a hybrid. He can do a little bit of everything.
Is that it? And then Xavier Peters will be
they like Peters
weak side defensive end, yeah. More in that role. So,
and Peters, out of those four guys we just brought up, Peters might be the one that makes the biggest impact early on.
Yeah, people are still worried if he's going to qualify. So I'm trying not to go too much into that because they're going to freak out if we talk about
it. I think he'll be fine. They feel confident he was going to qualify when they took the commitment. And as long as he didn't taper off since February.
Just to be different, I'll say linebacker. And there's depth there, but it's depth in the sense that there's a lot of guys that we don't know about. Does that make sense? Like, they're not separated
from... Less dependable pieces that we know what we can get out of them.
Correct. There's more guys that are probably seem even right now, and I think sometimes we can confuse that with depth. Yeah, right now, the dependable, I think, is a good way to put it, Chris. I'm not sure we get... I think a strong side defensive end, I think you know what you're getting out of Amy there. Like, and I think... Kendo, you can expect gradual, you know, increments from when he does return to the field. So I think that position's going to be decently set. Linebacker, I have a lot of questions about still.
That's fair.
Quentin C., who is the most improved player position group you've seen so far? Wide receiver, I think, is going to be the most improved by the end of it. I think just those guys, the coaching that they're getting, combined with the offense they're playing in, the simplicity of it, is going to help them a ton. I mean, I think we've already seen Tamarian Terry, you know, starting to build confidence and be pretty consistent. DJ Matthews, we talked about earlier in the show, I think he's going to be a lot of fun. You can make maybe offensive line or some other position groups too. Is that who you're going
to
go with?
I wouldn't go with O-line yet. I think they're in the process of trying to improve that. There's definitely an effort being made. I would truthfully go linebackers. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a clear purpose of what they're trying to accomplish in practices, which I didn't feel like that happened under Bill Miller.
The speed of which they are doing the drills is normal now. It's healthy. And before, like, I think we've alluded to this before, it stagnated under
Bill Miller. Logged into boredom.
Yep. Now everything's just super fast. It's cool. We'll tell. I'm thinking about the linebackers right now. Today they were doing a drill where they were having to go under, do bag work. So they're jumping over bags or agility drills over bags while having it's like a tent kind of that keeps, you know, makes them stay low.
Canopy.
Yeah, canopy. Oh, that's a good one because that's actually what it's called. And they had to come off, shed a hitting bag, and then tackle one of the rolling, like, tackling donuts, I guess. Yeah. And it's basically a moving target for them to hit.
And it's about wrapping up.
There's so many.
The biggest thing with tackling donut is driving yourself through, wrapping yourself up, and twisting and turning and pulling it down.
Always wrap up.
It's completely teaching you the way a linebacker should be tackling.
Mm-hmm.
Which they weren't very good. They weren't at last really year, good. So it's kind of important to teach that again.
But it's cool, all the different toys that they have. I mean, we'll see how it works. But there's a lot of, like, it kind of fits into, again, this whole quick, kind of millennial esque environment, you know, where everything's fast and has a purpose. But
things they use have sensible applications to the football field.
Yeah, but it's cool. Like, it's fun to watch. You know what I mean? Like, it's stuff that's going to keep attention because you have to be sharp. It's different. It's not monotonous. We'll see. They have some cool toys that they're playing with. But yeah, linebacker's a good one, Chris. I think that's going to be much better. Chuck Null asked about Amy moving. He's talking about the position changes. I don't want to go too much. We did. I asked about Campbell doing and how's George Campbell doing and what is he doing and how's he looking?
He's on the side working out, doing stretching, a little bit of jogging, working on the ladder, stuff like that. Nothing super aggressive. Not a ton of cutting. He's in a really good mood. He says he's feeling great. I've chatted with him a bit here and there around the facility. George is a real approachable guy, very nice guy. I think he feels real good. It's just a matter of getting the green light.
Who's your favorite player to interview?
I love Wally. Wally's, in my opinion, the best interview on this football team.
I feel kind of bad today.
Cam Akers is pretty good, too.
I was talking to Landon Dickerson today, and I asked him how him and Coach Fry meshed. And I don't articulate well sometimes, as you guys listening to the podcast probably know. And he thought I said mess. He's like, I don't think he's messing with anyone. But I do like Landon a lot. He's really smart and funny. He's been kind of one of my favorite guys to just watch during practice. He has funny one-liners and he's a sharp kid. I hope for him that he stays healthy. And
Marvin's great, too.
Marvin's really good.
Marvin's very straight.
He's probably had the quote of the preseason so far, talking about, you know, not feeling like a job anymore. So
yeah, I mean, we're in the honeymoon phase, and they are too, and there's an energy, but interviews have been drastically better. But I'd say Wally's probably my favorite.
DJ Matthews was really, really good the other day. I thought he was thoughtful and
human swagger.
Yeah. Let's see. Chuck Noll 11 is Upshur. That's Nazir Upshur looking like a number two tight end, and with the fullbacks kind of moving over there, how do you see that rotation working out? I think we both have been impressed with Upshur.
Yeah, and I'd say right now he's the guy behind Trey.
Yeah, McKitty.
You know, Alexander Marshall still kind of working into that spot. And while Gabe and Vickers are there, I don't truly consider them tight ends. They're more kind of like a 3 H-back type.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Gabe's one that has the upper hand with that specific role.
All right, let's power through these here. We have like 4 or 5 more left.
All right, let's quick.
All right, Bloom 24. Oh, wait, yeah, we just went over that one. Jesus, Brent. No, wait, did we? Someone's asking about Amy again. God.
Wally's a popular
guy. Yeah, clearly.
He's your favorite interview.
Everyone wants to know about him. Okay, but Bloom 24 is asking starting defensive line predictions, and who do you think comes off the bench behind Christmas and Marvin? His guess, for the record, is Robert Cooper and Corey Durden.
I think Durden is working himself up in that rotation. Jalen Parks has been good this preseason, too.
Yeah, he looks good.
I feel like we're forgetting. Oh, Frederick Jones ain't going anywhere. Fred knows what he's doing. Odell loves Fred. Fred is literally like a little Odell in a lot of ways. He's built kind of similar to what Odell was back in the day, and I think he plays ball in a similar fashion. So I would say, Marvin and DeMarcus, and then probably Fred and, kind of a mix of a Durden and Parks. And I'm not convinced Coop is a day one guy. Coop's going to have to reshape that body some. And while he's strong as an ox and he's a kid that has a great work ethic and is a great kid, he's going to have to reshape that body. His ability to give you a lot of consistent reps is going to be difficult. You might be able to spot duty him, but I don't know if he's a guy you can put out there for a 10-play series and maximize what you're going to get out of him without there being some rundown effect, which is something Marvin Wilson dealt with last year. So it's no way a knock. It's just the difference between playing high school and college game on a big body.
I don't know if they need that big body, so to speak, with all the depth they have there. Like, I don't think that's a necessity. Like, I think he could probably come in and give you 10 reps and, be a two-down player or something like that in a game, or 10 snaps, I should say. But, yeah, I don't think they need that. So
you want ends, too? I know we talked about that a bit, but, I mean, I think Burns and Kando are your first guys up, and Wally, if you need a bigger body, is on that side, too. And then Janarius is one to be determined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of the depth is relatively thin there, I guess. But you got the new guys coming in. I'm not sure what Malcolm Lamar is going to be physically. Like, is he a guy that can kick inside? Is Dennis Bergs ready to go from day one? I think one of the appeals with Florida State was that he was going to have a little bit of time to grow into his body and stuff. So
Dennis is very similar to Wally to me.
Mm-hmm. Like physically?
Physically and what they bring to the table. Better athletes than you would think for that big of a thick body.
Hey, defensive tackle, don't forget about Arthur Williams.
Yeah,
he's a good Cedric rotational Wood's guy. And Cedric Wood, he had a really nice rep in the Oklahoma drill.
Yeah.
So, again, the depth at D-tackles.
Odell's good.
Yeah.
Odell gets his guys prepped. He recruits at a high level. He has – even the guys he misses on are capable practice players who might be able to contribute in a game if necessary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. The group was strong enough to where they felt comfortable moving Wally Amy over. Yeah. And he would have been – he's played 200-plus snaps each of the last two seasons and done so at a fairly high level as a rotational guy.
Christmas and Marv beside each other, though, is a whole lot of beef. I mean, there's times that I'm sitting there shooting photos or shooting video in practice and – just gazing at the fact that, man, that is a large, talented interior.
Drooling a little bit, too. CRW04D asked about Hal and Tyson. He said TP. Tyson. Who do you like better? We already talked about that.
Yeah,
sorry. Newton Knoll, when Chris goes off on posters for questioning recruiting in March, why does he forgo the Oxford comma? Is there only one comma and the correct comma? This guy's just trolling. Newton Knoll's just trolling you right now.
I'm pretty sure Newton's an educator.
He is.
So we're
I like Newton.
He's having his time. I love people. I'm not going to go off on people anymore. I was in a cavern in Louisville when I read that stupidity and fired off what I fired. It is what it is. You're going to get that out of me once in a while. I love you all, but sometimes you just irritate the hell out of me. I love my wife, and sometimes she irritates the hell out of me, too.
Bloom 24, any reasons why the FSU, I'm not helping you out of that one, why the FSU staff isn't pushing for Hammond? Seems like great O-line prospect. I don't know who's Hammond.
Number 3 offensive guard in the country.
Oh.
I think
I'm getting married to a Hammond.
I don't get the feeling that right now their offensive line recruiting on the interior, that they're really overly concerned about what they're pursuing. They're trying to find a tackle. They need a tackle, and that's a position where they're working hard. But, no, they like him. He needs to step on campus here, and I don't know if he's going to come by himself or with the IMG Tour group, if the IMG Tour is coming here, but that's the key in recruiting guys right now. They want guys to step on campus.
Chuck Noel Levin asks, with the info you currently have and going off of your gut feelings, is it a never mind, I'm just going to throw shade. I'm not going to do it. What commits – Bob's eyebrows perked up knowing where I was going with that. What commits could you see committing to FSU soon?
Nah. I'm kind of taking a slow and steady approach with the spring, seeing who they get in. I mean, Dunmore's a guy that certainly likes here a lot. Trying to think who else I would toss into that. I mean, they've done a good job with Tyson. They've done a good job with Hal, but Hal's a heck of a poker player. Tough to really get a good read on. You know, Arian Smith, he's a 2020 kid, but he certainly loves it here. He came out at visit last week as a kid that I definitely think will end up here. Timothy Smith, I think that's Tim's last name, the D tackle from Sebastian River.
That's what he said earlier. Yeah.
He definitely came away impressed, but he's also very early in the process. So I'm not in a huge rush. I've been hesitant with doing crystal balls, both FSU and others. I'm just kind of trying to let the spring play out. I think the spring game would be the first point where we're going to see some commitments happen. I don't think the staff is truthfully pushing for a lot of commitments right now. Maurice Goolsbee is a kid. If they were pushing for commitments, he'd probably be in the fold.
All right, let's move on. Subpar F has three questions in A, B, and C. Not a ton of brevity here, but
Can I do multiple choice and pick one?
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
A is Brennan. It's Brendan, not Brennan. Jesus, people. If you had to... It's my fault for having B Sinone on the... that's when I signed up, like, before I worked for 24/7. I had a free comp account. Anyways, if you had to pick three guys who you're fairly sure will not be named the preseason All-ACC team, but will be on the postseason first or second team All-ACC team, who would you pick?
DJ Matthews.
Okay.
Yes, would be a no doubter for me.
Yes, Brennan.
I would probably say Landon Dickerson would be an all one for me.
Okay.
And Nazarene. I think Hamster's gonna flourish in this defense.
I like that you went with two North Carolina kids when you know the only people who vote for that shit is a bunch of North Carolina honks.
I didn't. Who would be your three?
I'm going to say one of the linebackers. I'll go Dontavius Jackson. I think just voters are going to look at pure tackles, and I think people aren't going to expect him to be. He's not going to even touch. None of the linebackers are going to touch preseason stuff. So I'll go with him. You know what? I'll put my money where my mouth is, Tamarian Terry. I'll go with him. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
I'm getting really hungry. And then I'll go with Stanford Samuels. I think people aren't going to test LaVonta Taylor, I don't think. When he's going to be playing field side, that's going to be a lot of passes coming his way for Stanford Samuels. That means a chance for...
Tall teams will still try LT.
They should. I mean, you're going to, but I think...
He'll make them pay here and there. And mm-hmm. They'll beat him sometimes, too. But the beautiful thing about him is he's a man of a very short memory.
Yeah.
LT is custom built to play that position.
His footwork the other day, man.
Standpoint. Yeah, he's still five practices and looks completely like a guy in the contract year.
Mm-hmm.
He's primed and ready.
Yeah, no, this is a bad year for him. But yeah, I think on the other side of that, you get Samuels is going to get the amount of action that McFadden had. I think he had like 60 or 70 passes thrown his way in each of the past 2 years. One year he decided to intercept them all. The other one he decided to just not. So that is my three. I'm proud of those answers. I think that's going to be good. Let's remember bookmark this, and we'll go back in a couple months. Really, really running out of steam here. If Willie Taggart goes 11-1 or 12-0 this year,
lifetime contract.
Which traditional featherweight team, $75 million guaranteed, team will rise up to go 8-5 and snatch the ACC Coach of the Year award from him?
Oh, Jesus.
Again, someone from Duke or North Carolina.
Yeah, David Cutcliffe. Just give it to Cutcliffe. He did a great job going 7-5.
It sounds like Donald Trump.
I wasn't going for that.
It's like a political curse. Come on. Does Harlan Burnett seem like the type of coach that could be a lifer at D.C.? No.
No, Burnett's going to be a head coach. I think a major reason Harlan Burnett came to Florida State.
He made a porn star joke.
I think a major reason Burnett came to Florida State is to kind of spread his wings. And so he kind of got out of the shadow of Michigan State and always being that guy there. Sometimes you can turn into almost like a lifetime assistant. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, Mickey Andrews is one of the best coaches I've ever covered. And he certainly was that. But I think Harlan somewhat came here to flourish. And if he turns that D around and turns it into an elite defense...
Speaking
in 2 years,
Stormy,
he has a shot. I mean, to me, he's kind of the Mark Stoops scenario when Stoops walked in here.
Mm-hmm.
If you do a good job revitalizing and turning around something that once was and consistently has been great, people are going to take notice and you're going to have a shot at getting a job. Now, Harlan certainly is a guy that comes off as a guy who can handle being a head coach. Very well-thinking man who can coach his butt off and, from what I understand, relates very well with recruits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not going to be a lifer because he's either going to do a really good job, like you said, and that's what I think what is – I mean, he said that on record. Like, he wanted to push himself. Ideally, I think for him, as he comes
to – I don't think he leaves Michigan State if he just wanted to be an assistant.
Correct. He could have just been there forever. Yeah. But basically, like, well, you know, the baseball program right now with me, it's like, you know, he'd probably – his window – like, you have to go somewhere sometimes. And I had the same thing when I was, like, younger in the industry. I interned at the Orlando Sentinel for years, and they wanted me to go get a full-time job somewhere else before they would hire me as a cover high schools. And administration changed, and I got a job there. But, yeah, that's what happens. He's not going to be there forever or here forever. He's going to do a really great job and get a head coaching job, or he's not going to do a great job and they'll find another defensive coordinator. I don't know if there's an in-between because the expectations at Florida State are so high. Let's move on. You know what? Nope. That's it. Someone asked if you were – I told the message board you were in a weird spot today, and he asked physically or emotionally. Thank God it's emotionally, not physically.
I don't have anything for the physical part of that. I mean, I've been in bad shape most of my life. I'm pretty used to this.
Recruiting, I think you went over a good amount of it. Yeah, is there anything else you want to touch on before we
We have that list up of visitors. That thing's going to constantly grow. We're not in a rush to throw a name on there until we're sure he's definitely coming. And a lot of times you get like, oh, I'm coming this week, and then this week becomes Wednesday finally, and that's when you can confirm and put Wednesday. They're getting a lot of kids in. They're very confident in their ability to get kids on campus here and to show them around. They feel very good about what they've done in the first week of the spring, and I think that's going to continue throughout the whole spring. They're also not in a rush, like I said. I don't think they're pushing for commitments right now. They want to get in good with a lot of kids, have a well-developed board, get to the summer and keep doing that, and they'll turn over some commitments possibly at the spring game. But I think by the end of July, you're going to see a healthy portion of the class put together. I think that their specialty event at the end of July that they hope to do will be kind of the, you know, almost midway point. And they're going to be ahead of where you should be for half of this class.
God help you, Christney. If you say someone's coming and they don't end up showing up that weekend, I'm going to threaten you and transfer to War Chant. With the Knowles 24/7 podcast, I'm Brendan Sinone. Thanks, Christney, for joining me. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.